to the Better Golf Podcast, powered by Wynn Daily Sports, where bettors go to bet better. Here are your hosts, Tee Off Sports and Sticks Picks.
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Better Golf Pod. I am your host, Tee Off Sports, and I'm happy everyone is joining me here again this week for the Zozo Championship. Before we get into my breakdown of the festivities in Japan, I do want to recap the CJ Cup in my hometown of Las Vegas, Nevada. I mentioned on the show last week that swings in all directions are not an uncommon occurrence in the world of gambling, and if we kept approaching each slate with an open and fresh mind, that we would quickly get ourselves back on track after a slow start to the new PGA Tour season. And lo and behold, that came to fruition with our 10th outright victory of the season, this time with Rory McIlroy at 20-1. In total, I had just 6.7 units up for grabs, but it was a massive ROI week because of Rory's win, netting us 8.2 units of profit. It is funny because I always try to stress that hitting it outright is the least predictable thing you can do when it comes to building a bankroll, but I've gone nuclear in that market as of late. 6 outright wins in the last 14 tournaments, 10 in the previous 34, plus 41.825 units on the season for a 75.98% ROI. Those are not sustainable numbers in this market, but the in-tournament head-to-heads are a little over a 20% ROI through 136 plays this season. I have a 17% ROI on the full collection of placement wagers. Head-to-heads are usually my bread and butter, but those have been the only thing holding us back from being another potential monster year of 100-plus units, but 75.871 units of profit for an 18.08% ROI to date. And I generally hate reading numbers off like that, but you have to sometimes recap after a win to show that the process is working. I've stressed this point on multiple shows that my reason for getting into the industry, especially the betting side of it, never came because I wanted to tout plays. I obviously go on various shows like this one and discuss what I like for an event because you can't escape the pick-making nature altogether, but I love helping my followers get better at doing this process themselves. At the end of the day, that is where the real maturation and profitability comes from, when you can handicap a board on your own before numbers move. And I provide the tools for you to do that weekly with my model I release for free on Twitter at TeeOffSports. Be sure to follow me there so you can make a copy of your own. But let's move into what we have in store this week for the Zozo Championship. Narashino Country Club, 7,041 yards, par 70, bent grass greens. We get another limited field of just 78 players. I've been going on all shows this week and making this exact point, but I think it's worth saying countless times. For me, the less data we have about a venue, the more I complicate a model. Part of the reason for that is because I'm trying to separate my research to be as unique as possible. It is challenging to find an extremely contrarian outlook when most of the knowns are going to be similar for all, but I can tinker with the stats in my database to fit a more precise viewpoint that will separate me from the pack. I think trusting your model while trying to create informed but unique decisions is something more people should try, and you would be surprised how different you can get in both roster construction for DFS or viewpoints in the betting market when you make informed changes to certain variables. But as far as we have this week with the course, Narashino Country Club was originally built in 1976 and features a rather claustrophobic design. The fairways are of average width, but the venue as a whole emphasizes a substantial tree-lined nature where golfers will be required to move the ball in multiple directions because of the doglegs throughout the 18 holes. You can make an argument that the course is more tree-heavy than tree-lined because you do have a few yards on all sides if you miss the fairways, but I'm under the belief accuracy is going to trump distance. There are an abnormal 5 par 3s, all measure below 200 yards. We have 3 par 5s in total, all exceed 560 yards, with the 14th measuring 608. I think that is noteworthy because the hole only has a 25.2% birdie or better rate. That is about as low as you will see for a par 5 in today's game. We have 10 par 4s that all go over the map with it. I mean, you have some short, others long. And that almost places us in the mindset of having to create two different par four qualifiers. One should be more built heavily towards birdie or better percentage. The other should include some weight on bogey avoidance, since all the longer par fours carry over a 20% bogey rate. But I weighed my model as such for the week. So I started with a weighted par four that is built towards this specific venue for 20%. That is going to include a combination of those key distances that I mentioned. It will also have a varying amount of smaller variables, a few of those being the bogey rate and the birdie or better percentage that I just talked about. Weighted par 3 for 10%, we have one more than usual and 4 of the 5 are gettable. That stat is derived from par 3 average and then some of the key proximity ranges where the holes are set up. weighted par 5 for 10%, overall par 5 birdie or better, some long iron play, and how a golfer performed on longer par 5s got weighted together to come up with a mathematical number there. I did a weighted bentgrass category for 10%. That was 70% strokes gained total at bentgrass properties and 30% strokes gained putting on bentgrass. 15% weighted proximity. The percentages won't be perfect because we don't have data at hand, but I still think it works better removing the less critical elements from the equation and trying to remap the course to fit what we have in front of us. Strokes gained total on short par 70s over the last 50 rounds for 10%. Narashino is a specific layout that falls under an easily quantifiable metric. It doesn't mean all players that have struggled at a shorter test will do so again, but it is nice to have an idea of who is more likely to pop from off the pace. Weighted driving for 15%. I used a combination of driving accuracy and fairways gained, and then stand safe percentage for 10%. There are a lot of bunkers that surround greens. Being able to get up and down should help salvage scores. So when putting all of that into a model, top five for me yielded Colin Morikawa, Xander Schauffele, Joaquin Niemann, Hideki Matsuyama, and Tommy Fleetwood. That is about what you would expect for the week, maybe minus Fleetwood, but there are pros and cons of me believing the pricing is solid once again. I'm not going to give a head-to-head card this week. I don't love no-cut tournaments as it is for a full tournament wager because we saw the downside of it last week when we backed Joaquin Niemann over Mark Leishman and lost that in the waning moments on Sunday after it never appeared to lose at any point. And unfortunately, you know, the volatility of what these bets become if you don't get in on the right side and things go wrong on it late, like you don't have the miscut potential that comes into play. But instead, I will give you a round one play that I like, which is Chris Kirk minus 105 over Ricky Fowler. That is on DraftKings. I just believe Fowler has received way too big of a boost in most markets. The matchup against Kirk as a whole is probably in the correct territory for him. But the dynamics of where we have with Kirk this week, I think he's one of the most underpriced players on the board in any market. You could flip those two in price, whether that be for DraftKings or inside the betting market. And I think you'd have a better pricing for both of them. So Chris Kirk minus 105 over Fowler in round one. As is always the case, you can find me on Twitter at TOSports to get any additional head-to-head plays that I come up with throughout the week. But I haven't had a ton over the last month. I know I keep sounding like a broken record on this, but pricing remains really good during the offseason. Normally, books get a little too focused on football and miss the window when it comes to some of the wagers they release for golf. But I think it goes to show how much the game is growing, that establishments are taking every tournament much more seriously. It will require more work to keep our edge that we have right now, but that is something I have never shied away from. Moving into the placement market, I have three that I've already locked in and a fourth that is still up in the air. I'm going to treat the sector as more of a head-to-head build, meaning I'm going to try and beat roughly half the field on some of these top 30 or 40 plays on FanDuel. The first wager I placed was Andrew Putnam at minus 105 to come top 40. Putnam is ranked 28th for me overall, 23rd for safety, and enters the week with two top 30s over his last three starts. There are certain players for me this week that received a boost because of their short games in general, and Putnam did fall into that category by ranking inside of the top 15 in sand save percentage, scrambling, bogey avoidance, and bent grass putting. I played Chris Kirk minus 120 to come top 30. It's going to be a heavy exposure week for me on Kirk in general, but he's gained with his irons in 8 of 9 starts. He ranks first in my model in par for average and overall bogey avoidance, and he's also inside the top 5 in scrambling, 3-putt percentage, proximity, and par 3 average. Kirk is one of the largest disparities in my model when it comes to my rank versus his salary of anyone in this field. And then I played Brendan Todd minus 135 inside the top 40 market. I want to make it clear that you are fine playing any of these a little bit deeper also. The reason why I don't recommend them as top 30s or 20s is because I want to make sure everybody has access to them. And these numbers move quickly. So I go back a range with it, like into the top, you know, 40 in this case to try to find where the value is. I just love how Todd has played in his career on similar par fours as the one he has in front of him in Japan. He's the number one driver and number one putter in my model. That is a great combination for someone that at least can get hot with the irons out of nowhere. We have seen him rotating between gaining and losing with his approach game over the last few months. But when he's gained 2.6 at the Fortinet, 4.6 at the Wyndham, those are courses where you get a boost for finding fairways. The only other one I haven't made a decision on yet is Pat Perez. If I play him, it will likely come as a top 20 because my model is yielding that upside difference where he isn't exactly safe. But when he does hit, he competes. Todd falls into that category also, but I had a hard time bypassing the top 40 price as the main recommendation there. And that will take us into the final section of the week, which is the red hot outright wagers. The first bet I placed before Paul Casey withdrew from the field was Joaquin Neiman at 28-1. We have seen him go ice cold with the putter recently, but the rest of his game has remained sharp. He has gained with his irons in 14 of 16, off the tee in 11 of 13. And while we aren't talking about massive numbers here during most of those appearances, my math continues to believe another win is trending for him. Proper price for me is 20-1 on Neiman. I took Tommy Fleetwood at 25-1. I realize that's going to be a contrarian take, but I was able to alter various portions of my model to show the Englishman as a value. Fleetwood is 37th for me out of 78 players when it comes to strokes gained approach. But when I condense the proximity numbers to equal more of what he should get this weekend at Narashino, he grades 8th in this field. We know from experience that Fleetwood does his best work overseas. And as someone that, you know, always finds him overvalued, I don't believe he is here. And that's one of the biggest proponents of why I like him this tournament. Chris Kirk at 50-1. Kirk has gained with his irons in 8 of 9 starts. Off the tee in only 4 of 7, but this is the kind of venue you would anticipate seeing him find success because of his accuracy off the tee. He is one of the biggest disparities of anyone in this field. I have him proper at 30-1. Ryan Palmer at 55-1. I know Palmer's form looks shaky with multiple missed cuts in his last handful of showings, but he ranks 10th in this field over the past 50 rounds on short par 70 layouts. Call it more of a gut feeling than anything else, but I do like how he plays in wind if this gets more blustery, and the math is showing a very small edge. Brendan Todd, 80-1. He is my biggest outright of the week because of all the reasons I mentioned for him in the top 40 market. And then I took a few dart throws on Doc Redman at 160-1 and James Hunt at 210-1. I'm never a Redman guy, but I always like him at a shorter course. And Hunt is a wild card at a good price. In total, it will be 1.19 units of exposure. The wins are all roughly 8 units, minus Todd, who is pushing 16 units if he gets across the finish line. But that will do it for me this week on another rapid fire and to the point show. You can find me on Twitter at TeeOffSports. You can find Nick at StixPicks, who is absolutely crushing the NFL content for Win Daily. And you can find the two of us together at Better Golf Pod. Good luck this week to anyone betting on the Zozo Championship, and let's continue to make that money.